There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, let me talk to you about a few things. First being draft. Draft.com, draft in your app store, is a great way to play fantasy sports. Snake-style drafts, just the way you like it. Now they've introduced auction drafts, and they have dominated the best ball draft world. Just wrapping up some massive NFL contests. They have an NFL playoff best ball. They have NBA best ball starting up very shortly. They'll have MLB best ball. So much great stuff. But if you like the daily stuff, they have the snake styles, the auctions, and unlike the other daily fantasy sites, no one else owns the player yet, so you don't have to worry about ownership, none of that. Small fields, small prices, big prices, whatever you want. Use promo code SDSports when you check out, and you get entry into a free $3 tournament of your choice. So if you're new to draft, draft.com, use promo code SDSports for a free $3 entry of your choice. Also, if you give us a rating and review on iTunes, we'd much, much appreciate it. I'd much, much appreciate it. Put a lot of time and effort into this, and I want to make it bigger and better. And with the rating and review, it'll help go a long, long ways. With that being said, welcome to Benched with Bubba, episode 134, with Derek Boyd of Baseball HQ, talking all kinds of MLB Hot Stove and fantasy baseball. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 133. And I took a little break for the holiday season, been gone for about 2 weeks. We have a lot of MLB Hot Stove action to talk about and their fantasy implications. In order to do so, joined by another member of Baseball HQ. You can find him on Twitter at DerekBHQ. Derek Boyd, how are we doing, man?
Doing great. Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
Well, thanks for joining me. I always like getting I love the Baseball HQ guys in general. You guys are all very, very knowledgeable in what you talk about. And I always like getting new voices on to talk some sports. And that's the most important thing, just having fun talking sports. So thanks for joining me. And like I said, we got a lot to talk about here. So we'll hit some deep. We'll hit some shallow. But we'll hit them all. We'll kick it off with the Marlins, Indians, and Rays three-way trade happened, I think, pretty close after my last episode. And the gist of it is Carlos Santana goes to Cleveland, returns to Cleveland. Yandy Diaz goes to Tampa Bay. Edwin goes to Seattle. You have Jake Bowers going to Cleveland. Actually, Carlos Santana went to Tampa Bay, my bad. But well, not to Cleveland. I'm totally all over it. But overall, let's start one by one. Carlos Santana's impacts. How do you see that coming up this season?
You know, Santana is still pretty much the same guy he's been throughout most of his career. I think, you know, when you you take a close look at Santana, what stands out to me is that he has excellent plate discipline, right? So he's patient, he makes good contact, and puts the ball in play, and he's got the launch angle. He hits the ball in the air and allows him to hit for some pretty consistent, decent power. You know, he's had one season, I think, where he hit 30 home runs. Like 2016, he hit 34 home runs. But for the most part, he's more of a you know, 20 plus home run guy. And I fully expect that to be the case again here in 2019, you know, mid 20s home runs. You know, last year he had a poor batting average, and a lot of that's, you know, BABIP related. He doesn't hit a whole lot of line drives, and you know, we know that the line drives are the, you know, very high BABIP on those line drives, and he just doesn't hit a whole lot of them most of the time. So he does suffer from the, you know, the BABIP's not going to regress. It's not going to be a, you know, 300 BABIP, but I think you know, he should bounce back a little bit from that 230 batting average he had last year. So, you know, maybe we're looking at somewhere around a, you know, 250, 260 hitter with, you know, 25 home run power and, you know, 80 to 90 RBIs, 80, 90 runs, something like that. So he should be pretty consistent again.
Yeah, like you said, the biggest thing with Carlos Santana, it's a model of consistency, and he's returning to a home that he loves. He only spent one season in Philadelphia. The rest of his career has been in Cleveland. I know a lot of stories came out. He never even sold his house. He wanted to return to Cleveland. So it's kind of a feel-good story any way you look at it. But when you break it down, he's going like 230 overall, 229 overall in FBCs, which is, to me, for consistency, like, that's not too bad. You know, three picks earlier, you got a guy like Miguel Sano, who's who knows what you're going to get. Two picks later, you got a guy, or three picks later, you got a guy like Kyle Seager. Justin Smoke's going shortly after. To me, I don't know about you, Carlos Santana seems kind of maybe a value at that point, or do you think that's about right?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's it's probably about the right spot to grab him if you're interested in that kind of production. You know, he doesn't really appeal to me with the way that I like to build my teams, but I don't think there's anything wrong with taking him there. He'll certainly get you, you know, what you need. You can plug him in, especially in on-base percentage leagues. You know, if you're using on-base percentage instead of batting average, I think his value is a lot higher.
Yeah, definitely OBP leagues, you can enjoy a lot more Carlos Santana, that's for sure. Let's talk about one of the guys that left Cleveland going to Tampa Bay. On the Twitterverse, he's a popular name because he just hits the ball so hard, but he likes to hit it on the ground a lot. And his name is Yandy Diaz. He's a big man, very, very big man. Not big like me, big like strong. Yandy Diaz is a talented man, and he might get full-time playing time finally. But it's kind of like we really don't know. Some people are super hyped. Some, like myself, kind of want to wait and see. He's going 437th overall, so you're not paying much for him. But what do you see in a guy like Yandy Diaz? Because the hype train is already going in full steam ahead.
Yeah, and he's a guy that's been interesting to me for years. And like you said, he's a physical specimen. I mean, you go and look at the pictures of him working out, and he's just absolutely shredded. And he does hit the ball really hard, so that, you know, plays into it as well. So we see this strong guy who hits the ball hard, and one of the things that he has that maybe some other power hitters or guys of his who hit the ball as hard as he does don't is that he has excellent plate discipline. Yandy, you know, takes walks and makes good contact, puts the ball in play. But like you mentioned, the missing piece right now is launch angle. He hits a lot of ground balls. He doesn't put the ball in the air enough. And that's really the missing piece. If he can, you know, but a lot of guys have altered their swings recently and added launch angle. So I think Yandy's worth speculating on, but I think probably the hype is a little bit ahead of where I'd be willing to speculate on him. I've speculated on him in the last couple of years. I've drafted him just for that reason, hoping that he'll add some launch angle, but it hasn't happened. You know, he'll play a little bit of third base, a little bit of first base, a little bit of DH there, I expect. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I would love nothing more than for him to have a breakout, but I wouldn't bank on it.
Yeah, we're kind of in the same boat there. Like the talent, you wouldn't be shocked if he finally, you know, builds in the launch angle. Like you said, it's a thing now. People are learning how to do it. And then all of a sudden, with that strength and everything, he goes and busts out 25, 30 plus homers or something. But A, playing in the trop doesn't help with that very much. And B, I got to see it first. It's just one of those things. Now, you know, if my lineup's pretty stable and it comes around to pick 437, that's a late pick. You can think about it, but that's kind of where I'd probably take a chance on another pitcher or something. But yeah, it kind of will dictate in the draft, but I want to see it. I hope it'll be there because I can already just picture everyone's minds getting blown by this man. But we'll see. We'll see. Talk about a veteran that goes from Cleveland to Seattle, and there's rumors he might be on the move again, but that's just because DePoto loves to do these things. But Edwin Encarnacion, basically, he's future salary relief is the best way I could look at it here for the Mariners. He's going to give him a spot in the lineup this year, and then they're going to be able to get rid of his money here very shortly. Edwin Encarnacion, who another kind of model of stability for the most part, but keeps chugging along. But what do you like with Edwin? Because going to Seattle from Cleveland is going to not favor in his offensive production.
It's true, but so you're buying Edwin for the power. He's a home run hitter. He's a slugger, and you know he's getting older. He's 36 years old, and his plate discipline is certainly starting to deteriorate. He doesn't make as much contact as he once did. He swings at pitches outside of the zone a lot more frequently than he did during his prime. But he is still among the league leaders in hard hit fly ball percentage, and that's one of the key indicators I like to look at for power numbers. You know, if you hit the ball in the air and you hit it hard in the air, you're more likely to hit home runs. And Edwin's still one of the league leaders in that. So I think his power is elite. I think it's going to play in any ballpark he goes to, but you're probably looking at a batting average liability as he as the plate discipline continues to erode.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I'm seeing. A little more possible striking out and whatnot, but you know, 32 or more home runs every year since 2012 is hard to pass up, like you're saying. He still hits the ball very, very hard. He kind of reminds me of a Pedro Serrano type from Major League, just hit ball hard. That's what he does very, very well. So he's going the weird part, though, it's hard because he's going overall at pick 118. So it's like you're not really getting a ton of savings on him. If you had to compare him to, like, say, Carlos Santana, how do you differentiate the two when you're hitting draft season?
That's an interesting comparison. So for me, I would probably favor Edwin just because I know that I've got an elite power source. I'd probably go with him over Santana. But if it was an on-base percentage league, I really like Santana's plate discipline. You know, you just have to love a guy that can almost walk as often as he strikes out. And Edwin's not there anymore. So, you know, I could see going either way depending on the cost. But as far as just knowing you have a bankable asset and an elite power hitter, I'd probably favor Edwin.
The last kind of major piece of this deal, there's always little prospects here and there. But Jake Bowers, who was a big-time prospect with the Rays, and some thought, okay, this is going to be his team and he's going to get going with this young outfield core. Well, he gets shipped to Cleveland, who needed an outfielder, so it worked out for them. But what's your thoughts on Bowers going there? It could be a nice little chance for him to get everyday playing time.
Well, that's what I think, too. You know, he should play DH, maybe first base and outfield a little bit in Cleveland. And pretty much, I think, between those three, should find everyday work. He's got enough pop and stolen base prowess to be relevant in both, you know, the home run and stolen base categories. I think he could go, you know, 260, 2010 with everyday playing time. He's definitely got some value there. He's a highly touted prospect, and you know, maybe he could even do better than that. But he's definitely somebody that's interesting for 2019.
Yeah, he's not going too high. He's going to pick 261. He's got first base outfield eligibility, at least in FBCs. And these are, again, we got to remember. Well, it's gone quite a bit because last time I did the pod, there was only like 14 drafts of data here. There's 34 now, so we're slowly building it up, but still. You know, when we look back at these numbers in February, this could get really interesting. But right now at 261, you do get some values going around guys like Shin-Soo Choo, who's maybe more reliable. But at the same time, Bowers might have that upside, depends on how you look at things. He's going a few picks behind a guy like Scott Schebler. I'm just comparing the outfield position guys. So it's an interesting look here with Jake Bowers because the sky is – or the ceiling is pretty big for this talent level. Like you said, it's hard to find – the power speed combo in a guy like this, you know, you might be shooting too high, but say 15 is possible with a guy like this, maybe with a little more upside. I don't know exactly if you agree with that or not, but it's a nice little balancing act. If he can hit 260, like you said, there's a lot to like there.
Oh, I agree completely. Yeah. 15, 20, 10, yeah, however you divide it up. It's hard to say with these young guys, but, he could, especially with, you know, youthful legs, sometimes that, you know, he's not a burner by any means, but you look at his sprint speed and it's, you know, just a touch above average, and he has run in the past. So he is a guy that could end up with, you know, 10, 15 stolen bases, 15, 20 home runs and a 260 batting average and be a pretty nice play for you. especially if he ends up getting playing time at multiple positions.
Exactly. And we know Tito likes to – he'll let his guys run. If he lets Jose Ramirez and that beautiful big body run like crazy, he'll let Jake Bowers run. So that's a good thing. All right, one of the kind of smaller signings but deeper leagues, you know, middle infield type stuff. Jordy Mercer goes to the Tigers. We don't have to go too deep into this, but do you have anything on Jordy Mercer? Because nothing flashy, but he still somehow gets it done from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, he's still an everyday shortstop. He's expected to play every day with the Tigers. So in deeper leagues, you can certainly deploy him there in your middle infield spot, and at least you'll know you'll be racking up counting stats. You know, he's probably not good for much more than 10 home runs and a 250-ish batting average, but it's there's something there in deeper leagues. Obviously, nothing to get excited about or nothing to speculate on a breakout. I just don't see any of that sort of thing coming.
Yeah, 32 years old. He's probably just holding a spot for their younger guys to come up. But everyday playing time is hard to come by. And I remember there was a few times last year in a pinch in like TGFBI or something, I'd be grabbing Jose Iglesias from the Tigers off the waiver wire going, okay, fill me in for a week or two because I have injuries. Jordy Mercer is that guy. So that's exactly why I wanted to bring him up. He's not going to usually kill your team. He might not light you on fire, but he's a good kind of just placeholder for you. All right. This one is really intriguing to me because, you know, a few years ago, Yonder Alonso, he's another – you mentioned Yandy Diaz launch angle. Yonder Alonso bought into it, and it worked out tremendously. Finished up in Oakland, goes to Cleveland on a good contract for him, keeps hitting some homers. Well, with all the moves they're making, there's really no room for him anymore. And they ship him off to the White Sox, which I think is an outstanding landing spot. Kind of makes you wonder the Jose Abreu thing, what's going on there. But all in all, if he gets some regular playing time, Yonder Alonso, I think, could really enjoy that ballpark. What's your thoughts on Yonder going to the White Sox?
Well, like you said, they do have Jose Abreu already entrenched at first base. I hadn't thought about the possibility you just mentioned of what's going on there. You know, are they thinking of moving him? But if he's still there, if Abreu's still there playing first base every day, you know, Alonso will play a little bit, you know, spell him at times, hit a little bit of DH. But what really holds Alonso back to me is that he's just dreadful against left-handed pitching. And that's probably where, you know, he'll end up sitting most of the time that a southpaw's on the mound. I mean, he still has good pop, but it's not special pop. It's you know, again, it's 20-plus home run pop, which in this – and this era is just, you know, it's not exciting. And he, to get to that power, as we noticed, he, you know, he changed his launch angle. And he also had to open up his swing. He ended up striking out a lot more in 2017 and 2018 than he had previously to get to that, you know, mid-20s home run power, which leaves him with, you know, a little, it makes him, he doesn't have much batting average prowess anymore. He's certainly not a batting average asset. So, he still has that pop. If he were to play every day, he would probably be – he could maybe even approach 30 home runs, but I don't think he'll end up playing every day. I think he'll sit against lefties, and he's behind Abreu. So unless something happens there, I'm not too enthused with Yonder, although, like you said, the ballpark could help.
Yeah, the ballpark stands out to me, and I would hope they would not move Abreu. I just know it's like every year there's a rumor that pops up every, like, twice a year about they want to rebuild, they could send them off. But then to me, I've always been a fan of keeping Abreu because they have so many Latin young players, and this guy is the epitome of, I came over from Cuba, I figured it out, like, here you go, follow my steps. He hasn't made a mistake, at least none of that we know of, outside of in the public eye. So I think this is the kind of thing where you keep a guy like Abreu, still kind of cheap. He's still, you know, he is older than people think. He's, I think he's getting early to mid-30s by now. He's not the youngest, unless I'm totally wrong. Could be wrong on Abreu, but that's what I thought I was reading. But I think he's a nice guy as leadership there. It's just kind of, yeah, if Yonder can't hit lefties, that's going to be a tough one. That's for sure. But the ballpark, man, that's a juicy-looking spot there.
Yeah, I agree.
Just another small one here. Justin Bour goes to the Angels. We know that Albert Pujols is still there. He's going to be playing first base, but he'll be DHing for a while with our good old boy. Oh my God, how am I forgetting? This is good. The rookie of the year last year. Why am I even just blanking on this? Help me out here, Derek.
Let's see.
He pitches and he hits. He's Japanese.
Oh, Ohtani.
Ohtani, I was going to kind of want to say Tanaka. Wow, talk about the holidays brain farting you folks. There you go. Shohei Ohtani is going to be on the DL for a while, so they do have the DH possibility with Pujols back there. Eventually that'll get murky if they try to hit him a lot. We still don't know how that's going to play out. But Boer is another left-handed bat out there. Any interest in the guy, Justin Boer, or is his value kind of all but gone now he left Miami?
Well, I think he's a lot. He reminds me a lot of Yonder Alonso, kind of a similar thing where he's got, you know, solid 20-plus home run power. He's not a batting average asset. He's, you know, in a first-base DH timeshare with a few other guys. And he's, like you mentioned, he's a left-handed batter, and he's not good against lefties either. He'll probably sit a lot against left-handed pitchers. So I think he's pretty similar to Alonso in that way. If he got a lot more playing time, we saw what he could do in 2017. You know, that was his ceiling for sure. But I don't expect him to get back to that level, especially in the batting average department.
I think guys like Boer and Alonso could be fun for daily leagues. I'd keep an eye on them, but weekly leagues could be pretty tricky, probably.
Agreed.
Let's go to the Bronx. This is a move I'm not a Yankees fan by any means. I'd rather they lose more than win. But this is a move I thought needed to be done immediately, and they finally did it. They brought J.A. Happ back to the Bronx. He's one of those lefties that thrives in these kind of places. And we already talked about Carlos Santana being a model of consistency. I'm pretty sure J.A. Happ might be the pitching version of this. He keeps getting older, and he keeps putting out almost the same line over and over and over again. So he's really comfortable, and it's weird. People just don't seem to want to go to him. It's one of his highest ADPs he has. He's going 142 right now overall, which is high for him. But in years past, no really respect for Happ. How do you like this landing spot fantasy-wise for J.A. Happ?
You know, like you said, I'm like you. I'm not a Yankees fan at all. I grew up in the D.C. Baltimore metro area. I grew up an Orioles fan. And I'm a big Nationals fan now, Orioles fan as well, and have been hating the Yankees for most of my life. But J.A. Happ, you're right. He's so consistent, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't seem to matter where he pitches. He just comes out there with the same stuff. You know, his velocity has been very consistent. It's even on the rise, just a touch. You know, for a lefty, he throws a 92-mile-an-hour fastball, which isn't bad. And he doesn't have – I think people don't really – he doesn't get a whole lot of fanfare because he doesn't have a real exciting swing-and-miss secondary pitch that you'll see a lot of gifs of, or, you know, that'll be really exciting when we vote for the, you know, the best strikeout pitches. He doesn't have one of those. You know, he throws a four seam, he throws a slider, he throws a changeup, and he strategically uses each of his pitches to get whiffs when he needs them. And you saw his strikeout rate spiked. It was high. It was well above a strikeout per inning last year. And I think he can do it again. I think that it's largely repeatable. You know, a mid threes ERA, a solid 1.2 WHIP, and a strikeout per inning. Happ's even in Yankee Stadium, he's just a really solid, a good starting pitcher to have on your roster that's completely undervalued, I think.
Yeah, he's a guy that will find his way on many teams of mine. So at least that's how it's been in the past. I'll keep shooting for him. The year it falls apart is the year it falls apart, and I'll just accept it as it is. Because and then the pitching landscape we see these days, there's so much volatility. It's just ridiculous. If you can, you know, lock me in a guy like him and maybe a couple other big guys, then you can really take those chances later on, in my opinion. So I love J.A. Happ. It hurts, like I said, rooting for the Yankees. But when it comes to fantasy, you do what's best for your team. And I think this is a great, great spot to land for him.
Absolutely.
All right. This is a move I never understood. Why the hell would you trade Noah Syndergaard for JT Realmuto when you could go sign Yasmani Grandal or Wilson Ramos? This made the most sense in all the planet. But I love Wilson Ramos. I was huge on him last year. He made me very, very happy. Everybody else is back on the bandwagon now this year after what they saw. You know, City Field is not the best hitter's park, but it's not worse. It's probably around mid-pack, just slightly less than mid-pack on the park factors and all that. But a really good deal for the Mets. But fantasy-wise, it's got an everyday role, catching some really good pitchers. But offensively, he's going to be hitting in the middle of that lineup around some young studs. What's your thoughts on Wilson Ramos?
So, yeah, I got a chance to watch Wilson. You know, he was an everyday player here in Washington, D.C. for a number of years. He was our catcher, and we liked him a lot. He was an exciting player. What I like about Wilson is that there's a chance every year that he can produce above-average power and be a batting average asset, which from a catcher just seems so rare. And he's – He is injury prone. And that's the big knock on him, and trying to know when he's not hitting well because he's playing through an injury versus when, you know, there's just, you know, some sort of skill deterioration. Sometimes it's hard to determine. He's just right on the fringe of like being a power asset and, you know, like having above average power and his hard hit rates and all of those things. It's nothing is too clear when it comes to Wilson to be able to, you know, to look at his peripherals and go and make a judgment call on that. But there is always that chance that he's going to hit 300, which he's done multiple times, and that he's going to hit, you know, for a good amount of home runs. And so I like that about him. Now, coming off of a 300 season in 2018, that was largely the result of a career-high BABIP, I think that looking at his 2019 forecast, you have to bake in some batting average regression there. He's probably not likely to hit 300 again, especially as you see his contact rates continue to have declined a little bit. You know, he's not making contact at a, you know, mid-80s rate. It's more like an upper 70s, which is right around 80, which is still pretty good. But you'd have to think that, you know, I'd probably say more of a 270, 260 hitter, you know, coming into the season with, you know, 15 home runs. And that's if he stays healthy. So I do like Wilson Ramos as a catcher. I'm just probably hedging my bets a little bit based on, you know, what he did last year.
Yeah, that's what stinks is, like I said, everyone's going to be on the bandwagon now. He's already going pick 140 overall, and that's one of the top catchers off the board. He's right behind Wilson Contreras. I'd rather have Wilson Ramos than Wilson Contreras, not just because he uses one L instead of two in his name, but I think he's the better player right now, given Wilson Contreras the abilities there. But a guy like Wilson Ramos, like you said, when it comes to the catcher's position, it's really hard to get a – they're usually always batting average liabilities. Like, you have Buster Posey, who's great, but – and for once, he's not expensive on draft day. So I might, for the first time as a Giants fan, own Buster Posey. But Wilson Ramos, in his career, has had a 260 or better average in almost every season he's played, all but one season, full seasons. And that's really, really good for a catcher, which sounds bad at 260. But that's really good. You've mentioned he's got those a couple seasons over 300. He's been like 275 or better, I think, in like two-thirds of his seasons. Like, just that alone is tremendous for a catcher. And that gives you the, you know, a lot of people like to wait on catchers, but the catcher's landscape, you know, I don't want to go full in fantasy football, but it feels like tight ends now, where you have like three or four really good ones, and then it's just this mesh of everything else of what's going on. So I don't know if you like to pay up for catcher, and I really don't want to pay up for catcher, but Wilson Ramos gives you so much stability, more than just maybe one, like, you know, because Yasmani Grandal hits a lot of homers, but does average kills you. There's so much fluctuation. Wilson does a little bit of everything very, very well.
Yeah, and you're right about that. And I, you know, it depends on the league format regarding, you know, whether you pay up for catchers or not. For me, when I'm playing solo, I like to play the NFBC, you know, draft champions, 15 team, you know, the 50 round draft. And I like to play in those deep leagues that, and when I'm playing in one of those, I will pay up a little bit for a catcher. I've owned Buster Posey a couple times in those kind of leagues. Cause I love to just be able to plug somebody in that, you know, is going to be an asset in those spots, because it's so deep. You get to draft so many other players that you're likely going to be able to fill in all your other hitting spots just fine. But it's tough to find a good catcher. But in a more shallow league, I do like to wait a little bit, and I'll, you know, try to stream or find somebody that, you know, emerges during the season, and or somebody that gets hurt and somebody else steps up and is hitting hot for a little while, and just plug them into the lineup, especially if you only have one catcher. Two catcher leagues, I think that's when it's time to pay up a little bit.
No, those are all great points, and that's the age-old debate. Should all leagues be two catchers or one catcher? And depth of league is very, very important, because, you know, you play TGFBI with 15 teams, and it can get really, really challenging to stream catchers. But I play a lot of 10 and 12 teamers with friends and everything, and, yeah, you can stream them all day long, and then maybe you hit that Wilson Ramos by, like, the third month of the year, because there's always, like, one or two that just burst on the scene, like, oh, okay, this guy's going to be pretty good this year. And it'll make it work. Or heck, maybe Yadi Molina at age like 74 still puts together a great season. I don't know how he keeps doing it, but he does it. So there are options like that, and that's a really, really good point. All right, let's go to a move that only the Texas Rangers can make, in my opinion. I guess it's because they need stability and innings eating in a rotation when they rebuild, so I get it. Lance Lynn got paid 3 years, $30 million. Good for him. But, man, Lance Lynn in Texas sounds like just fantasy, you know, DFS paradise. What's your thoughts on Lance Lynn going to Texas?
Yeah, it was an ugly season. 2018 was just for Lance Lynn on the surface. The stats were really ugly. But in taking a closer look at him, what I noticed is that he posted the best velocity, the best swinging strike rate, and the best ground ball rate of his career when as a starting pitcher. And, you know, since you look up his line there, and with all those ground balls, especially last year, home runs really weren't a problem. So I'm not sure there's much of a ballpark upgrade from New York to Texas, but I do expect ERA and WHIP to improve in 2019. Probably not enough to make him fantasy relevant, but in the deepest of leagues, you know, there might be something here. So I'm just wondering how much the Rangers were looking at that, you know, looking at that bump in velocity and swinging strikes and ground balls and saying, you know, he may have been a little bit unfortunate in 2018. We think he can be a little better. Maybe we see something in him that we can tweak and make him even better than that, you know, better than we expect in 2019. And that's why they paid up. But on the surface, yeah, it looks like a pretty bad signing. I guess there's a glimmer of hope. I don't think I'll own him a whole lot in any leagues. I'm more on your side there, but I guess I can see a little bit of what the Rangers might have seen in Lance Lynn.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because I've heard Paul Spohr and some other guys talk about it. We have to remember last year's stats when he, especially early on with the Twins, he didn't have a spring training, so he was learning ramped up on the fly. That's not really a good thing to do against professional baseball players, but so that's why he had a bit like over 5 ERA the first, what, month and a half, 2 months. And then it's been mentioned, you know, once he got traded to the Yankees and found his groove, you mentioned the velocity went up. He actually pitched overall peripheral stat-wise pretty well with the Yankees. And we've seen Lance Lynn in the past years with the Cardinals. He's had some down moments, but before he went to the Twins, he was almost like another consistent pitcher. He gave you, you know, 170 innings or whatever, and he was 3.8 ERA. That's what he did. Now, yes, Texas is scary in the summertime, but even if you can stream him or whatever, he could be useful. He's going over pick for, like 407 right now. So he's not costing you anything. I'm not saying I'm going to own him by any means because I'm terrified, but as draft dictates, it could become more of an intriguing play because we got another couple pitchers here we're going to talk about shortly that are all on that kind of, maybe categories.
Yeah.
All right, another kind of quickie, similar to the Justin Bour situation. Matt Adams goes to the Nats. We know he's played really well there in the past. He's basically a left-handed bat in a platoon, I would imagine. Any interest in the Matt Adams, or is he kind of just lumped into that Yonder Alonso, Justin Bour conversation?
Yeah, he's probably in that same conversation there. He's behind Ryan Zimmerman at first base with the Nationals. When Adams got playing time last year, he was pretty good. He showed that he still has really good power, and right, he's probably lumped in with those other guys. If something were to happen to Zimmerman and Adams were to play every day, I think he has, just like those other guys, probably close to 30 home run upside, but chances are it's not going to happen. So, I mean, he's a nice bench player for the Nationals. I totally get why they would want him on their team. Fantasy-wise, you know, maybe if you're in a draft and hold and you can get him in the 40th round or something like that, I could see him being interesting just in case Zimmerman, you know, he's been Zimmerman doesn't have the greatest health track record. So there's a decent chance Adams gets pretty good playing time with the Nationals. I could see speculating there, but other than that, I don't see any great interest in Matt Adams.
Yeah, I like that draft and hold call. It's a kind of really good later round pick to have because, you know, he could get that role. Zimmerman could find the DL two different times this year or something. So
yeah,
that could be very, very intriguing there. All right, another one of those kind of questionable pitchers. I like the move. I want to see how it works because, you know, Matt Harvey in LA is not always the best situation. But it's intriguing ballpark-wise, division-wise. Goes to the Angels. I actually thought he wasn't horrible with the Reds. Sure, a 4.5 ERA, still not great. But there were games and glimmers of hope. He was almost getting back to like a K per inning, 111 strikeouts and 128 innings with the Reds. It was – you saw games where he pitched really, really well and surprised me and looked like the guy of old. Still not the greatest things, you know. What's your thoughts on a Matt Harvey going to the Angels?
I'm like you. I think it was a good signing. It's a, you know, very worthy speculation there from a guy who was as good as he was early in his career there with the Mets and did seem to find his footing to some degree there with with the Reds last year after that trade. I hadn't thought about him being in LA and the behavior problems and issues that could come up there. That's a really good point. given Matt,
he's had fun out there before, just on road trips. So it'll be interesting.
It will be. That's a really good point. I'm glad you mentioned that. Looking at his overall season line, it was horrendous. But after the trade, he was a little bit better. What really intrigues me is the September. If you just isolate his September stats, he just seemed to keep getting better and better. In September, it was almost like vintage, from a skills perspective, vintage Matt Harvey. You know, he had a 9.5 K per nine, 1.9 walk per nine, giving you a nice, 5.0 walk to strikeout to walk ratio. He was throwing strikes at an extremely high rate, higher than he even did during his prime with the Mets. His first pitch strike rate was right there where it was during his prime. His swinging strike rate, 15% in September, higher than he'd ever had, with the Mets. His velocity wasn't all the way back, but we're in September, and even after the trade, all of last year, it was pretty solid, 94 miles an hour. After the trade, 94.5, and then September got up to 94.7. He still was having home run issues, so that's going to be the thing to watch. But LA may help a little bit with that, certainly over Cincinnati. Looking at him a little closer, what I noticed in September, the thing that really made the big jump there, that helped him make that big jump in swing strike rate from 10% on the season to 15% in September, was that he started throwing his curveball more. He threw it 10% of the time in September, and the swinging strike rate on that pitch spiked to 28% in September. So that gave him along with his slider, gave him another strikeout pitch. And I think if he figured something out there with that pitch in September that's going to carry over into 2019, it could be a lot like Trevor Bauer. That's exactly how he finished 2017, was with that similar sort of a spike there. And I was a little skeptical. Trevor Bauer has this long track record of not being, very good, not having great control. But then we saw that he really did figure something out later there in the season, and it carried over. So if that's the case with Matt Harvey here as well, he may be someone that's interesting for fantasy owners in 2019.
Okay, this is terrifying because I agree with everything you say. Those were a lot of really, really good stats there. And I was with you on the September. Like, I went late August into September. I owned him on – I picked him up in season-long leagues. I do a daily DFS show Monday through Friday, and I pretty much was recommending him every time out. People thought I was crazy, and it was just – something looked different with Matt Harvey. And I don't know what it was. There could be a million answers to that, man. So I've always said his biggest issue is between his ears and the talents there. And I think Jason Collette came out with an article or some tweets the other day. Since he had his thoracic outlet surgery, just a difference in numbers, velocities, and all that. And that's, to me, was stuff that was expected. And to see the improvements, like you mentioned there, towards the end of the season, I think going to LA could be really interesting. It's a very good pitcher's ballpark. He's going to get to pitch games in Oakland also, in Seattle. Sure, the Astros are going to be scary. Sure, Texas is not fun. But, 3 out of 5, not bad. I think there's a lot to be intrigued with here. He's going about 368, 370 overall. You could do a lot worse at that point in your draft on a guy like Matt Harvey, especially if you got like a K per nine league or whatever. Because one thing I noticed the Reds started doing really well, it felt like, and I didn't really pay attention to pitch counts as much. Maybe that had something to do with it. It seemed like they give him 5 or 6 innings and get him out of there before he could get to that kind of, is he tired? Is he in no man's land? Is it the third time through the order? All those things that could get Matt Harvey in trouble. It's like, okay, he uses curveball more. He uses fastball more. Let's get him out of here. And I think there's a lot to be said about that. So, it'll be fun to see how that works.
Yeah, it really will. He's an interesting guy for next year. The one thing that I did notice that gave me a little bit of pause, because he did have the home run issues. His home run per nine last year was 1.6, which is above league average, and it got worse even as he got better in September. It was up to 1.9, and you see that I was taking a look at it, and he permitted hard contact on 39% of the balls that batters put in play against him in 2018, so his career average prior to 18 was 28%. So I'm just wondering, what was he just throwing meatballs down the middle of the plate? I didn't get a chance to watch him a whole lot. I'm not sure why batters were able to square him up so much more last year than they had previously, but that's the one thing that really does give me pause. But as you mentioned, given his ADP right now in the mid 300s, I'm drafting him. I've done my first NFBC Draft Champions League, and I drafted him in that league. And as long as his ADP doesn't rise much, I'll probably get him in most of my leagues.
I love it. Another move the Angels made. I really like what the Angels are doing right now. They're trying to go for it while they have Trout. I get it, and they're not breaking the bank in the process. They go and get Trevor Cahill. So they get Cahill and Harvey for a combined like $22 million, I think is outstanding. Cahill sure comes with the injury risk. That's been well established. But when he's out there, he's really darn good. And he throws that slider more than almost anybody in baseball. But really, really talented. Could be a great fit. What's your thoughts on Trevor Cahill?
Like you said, yeah, when he's healthy, he gets ground balls with all four of his pitches. He throws a sinker, a change, a slider, and a curveball. All of them get ground balls. And the three off-speed pitches, all of them can be, on any given day, they can be a strikeout pitch, especially that changeup. The problem with Cahill is that it seems to me, and I've tried watching him a lot over the last few years because he's always intriguing, and I just want to see, how does this guy succeed and see if it's something I can bank on. And what I've noticed is that it seems like he really needs to be completely healthy to pitch well, which I think most pitchers, you've probably heard the saying that no pitcher's ever really healthy. Like they're always nursing some sort of an injury. It's just, can you pitch through it or not? But it seems with Cahill that when he's really healthy, he pitches well. But if anything's off at all physically, he seems to struggle. So to me, he's a streaming option when things are going well. But I can't count on Trevor Cahill as anything more than that. You can't count on him for innings, and you can't even count on him to pitch well consistently. I like him. He is intriguing, but I think he is what he is at this point.
Yeah, probably four different times last year. That's just how it went with Trevor Cahill. So totally agree with what you have to say there. Let's go to Cleveland. Back to Cleveland, I should say. Or not, leaving Cleveland, going to Houston. The Astros get Michael Brantley, 2 years, $32 million. The salary alone, I think, is outstanding if he stays healthy. That's a big if with Michael Brantley. But we've seen, outside of 2016 and 2017, he's playing about 140 games or more. And when he does that, he is extremely productive. What's your thoughts on Brantley going to one of the yearly title contenders right now on a pretty darn good contract?
Yeah, interestingly enough, I was taking a look at the ballpark factors, and it's not favorable for him. It's actually a decline in ballpark factors. That may hurt him a little bit, but he's not a power hitter, right? So Michael Brantley, his bread and butter is that he makes contact frequently, and he makes hard contact frequently. And that's what I really like him. I've owned him in a lot of teams, and it's rare to find somebody who's a true, consistent batting average asset who, it's not BABIP induced. You can look at the contact rates and the line drive rates and the hard hit rates, and you say, yes, this guy is a legit 300 hitter. And, unless something changes, he's going to keep hitting right around 300. I think that's pretty rare in this era. So I like him a lot for that. When he's healthy, like you said, he's a great producer. He does hit for a little bit of pop, and he doesn't have speed really. I mean, he steals bases, but he's not a fast base runner. His sprint speeds are below average, but he has obviously learned the art, the craft of stealing bases. And you look at his stolen base success rates, 2014, 96%, 2015, 94%, 2017, 92%, last year, 80%. He's always well above the break-even point, and I think teams will continue to let him to run. I think the Astros will continue letting him run as he picks his spots well. So, you're probably looking at another repeat season from him, I think. The 300 batting average, another 15 home runs, another 10-plus stolen bases, and he's a real nice player there.
Yeah, I like him quite a bit. He's going 126 right now in NFBC. Playing a little comparisons with you just for fun. At 123, and another guy with tons of injury risk and doesn't have a home right now, but AJ Pollock. Who would you rather have between those two?
That's a good comparison. I actually own both of them in my dynasty league. You said they both have injury risk. I'd probably go with Brantley right now, just because I like to know what I have. And with Pollock, it's just he's so all over the place. I mean, is he a speed guy? Is he a power guy? Last year, it looked like he was more power than speed, but for most of his career, he's been more speed than power. And I'm just not quite sure what to expect with him. So for just team construction purposes, knowing what I have, I'd rather go with Brantley right now.
There's a couple of others here, but there's just one other I'll ask you. I said Brantley 126 at 130. You got David Peralta coming off a career season in Arizona. Who would you rather have?
Oh, yeah, and I'll still go with – I'll take Brantley there again. Just go with that consistency.
Perfect, yeah. Peralta was awesome. It was just – let's see that happen again, because he's another guy with injury concerns. Like, he doesn't stay healthy very often either. It's a common theme in that little range. There's a lot of interesting players in that area. All right, let's go to San Diego. This is I don't know how they signed him this cheap. I really don't. I think this is phenomenal for the San Diego Padres. You know, you just want a Gold Glove, won a World Series with the Red Sox. Ian Kinsler, he's probably a good veteran piece, kind of a placeholder as the young guys come up. But for now, he's their starting second baseman. And that does have some you know, value, especially going around pick like 374 right now. What's your interest in Ian Kinsler?
So he's still, I mean, even like you said, at age 37, he still has excellent plate discipline and enough power and speed to provide double-digit home runs and stolen bases. He's been really unfortunate in the BABIP department the last 2 years. And if that regresses close to his career rate of, you know, around 290, he'd probably hit around 260 or so. So I think that Kinsler's still chugging along, and, you know, he's not that guy that he once was when he was a 30-30, you know, star player, but there's still value to be had from him as an everyday player who can get you a little bit of pop and a little bit of speed and maybe even hit for decent batting average.
Yeah, no, I think there's something to like there for sure. Let's go to your boys in the Nats. They, you know, they let Tanner Roark go to Cincinnati. That was, you know, I've heard so many different reactions to that. But they go and get Anibal Sanchez. To me, without even just when I first heard the announcement, I didn't look at any stats. I still haven't really dug into them, and I could be way, way off. But just in general terms, basically they just swap players. In my opinion. Yeah. I think Anibal could be a little better, but Tanner's shown signs of being really good too. I get Tanner was going to be leaving soon. You bring Anibal in off of a great season. I've seen all the stuff on his pitch mix changes and everything. But what's your thoughts on Anibal Sanchez? You know, you could say for your Nats for one, and then fantasy-wise.
Okay. Yeah. For my Nats, I'm not sure I understood the move. I like Tanner Roark, and he was a guy that I thought had some upside last year. Didn't really come to fruition, but in draft season, I grabbed him in a number of leagues in 2018. So I'm not sure I really understood the move yet or what they're trying to do there, but in Mike Rizzo, we trust, right? For the most part, he's done a really good job, I think, as the Nationals general manager. So I'm sure he knows a lot more about what he's doing here than I would. I didn't see the rationale behind it, but we'll trust him for now. From a fantasy perspective, Sanchez was one of those guys that I was speculating on last year, in the draft and hold leagues really deep. I drafted him in a number of leagues, and he ended up being an asset. You know, he ended up pitching pretty well, and I was able to use him. I was happy about that. And it was a skills-based thing. So even when Sanchez has been really bad, you could take a closer look under the hood and you could see that there were still some things there. He could still miss bats. He still had he was still throwing enough strikes that he should have decent control, even though his control got pretty bad there for a bit. So there's always a little something there. Now, last year, Sanchez probably pitched over his head. I don't see him repeating that this year. So I think that he could, you know, he's somebody that depending on where you could get him, you may be able to use him a little bit. He's injury prone. The stuff, the velocity is not what it once was. But like you said, there was a pitch mix change and that did help elevate his game some. So there's a little bit of legitimacy to that, I think. You know, I'm not terribly excited about him for any league. I didn't draft him in the one league that I have drafted already, but he was certainly on my list. So he's somebody you could look at, but nothing too exciting.
Yeah, he's intriguing because, yeah, the metrics were there. And yeah, it was Eno Saris wrote a huge article on the different adjustments in his pitch mixes. And yeah, it's all fine and dandy. I get it. But he seemed to really limit the home runs. And then I find out it really shocked me at the end of the year because the way the season started compared to the end of the year, that the ballpark there in Atlanta was very, very pitcher friendly when it came to the home run ball, which shocked me. It felt like every time you were watching the game, it was home run derby at times, but no, it was really not. So it'll be interesting to see how that plans out for him. He's not horrible. He's not bad, but very interesting for Anibal Sanchez.
Well, that's the thing. And you mentioned the home run friendliness there. That's not real home run friendly Atlanta, but Nats Park is. I think Rob Silver posted on Twitter the other day, like, the most home run friendly ballparks last year. And I think National Stadium came in fourth or fifth, something like that. So that could be a problem for Sanchez next year.
Could be very interesting there. The Cardinals, they may have found a closer. Like, they won't commit to him being the closer fully because, you know, it might be Aaron Hicks part of the time. It might not be, plus the ever-changing landscape in baseball where I just want my best pitcher to pitch the best innings, which in theory is the way to do it. Like, that is correct. When it comes to fantasy, it's a big pain in our rear end. They go and sign Andrew Miller, who had one of his not-so-good years, but overall we know what he can do. Could just be the wear and tear finally getting to him. What's your thoughts on Andrew Miller going to St. Louis fantasy-wise? Like, how is this going to be worth it? Because he's one of the big guns, but there's still a lot of question marks.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty much the status quo for him right now. I mean, he did have knee, shoulder, and hammy injuries last year that I think likely contributed to the poor numbers, you know, the ERA and WHIP that he posted. Skills were also down a little bit, but they're still sufficient for him to close, certainly. And like you mentioned, Jordan Hicks is there. He may end up sharing closing duties, but that's been kind of Miller's – it's been what's happened with him throughout his career. You know, he's never really been the closer for, you know, right? He hasn't been consistently a 40-save guy. They've utilized him as a left-hander in those high-leverage situations, which, like you said, completely makes sense. And I think it's going to be the same thing with the Cardinals. They're a smart organization. They're going to use him the best they can to win ball games, and that may not always be, you know, pitching in the ninth inning with bases empty and a 3-run lead. You know, that's so. I think it's probably going to be the same thing. Maybe 20 saves from him, but probably some stellar ERA, WHIP, and strikeouts.
Yeah, real quick, I'll ask this question. I have my Twitter poll going out there right now. Is with this ever changing closer landscape, and in the old days when you kind of could rely on at least 20. Of the 30 teams holding one guy for most of the year, you just wait on closers till the end. That was just kind of how it was, or at least middle of your draft. Now it's like four or five guys you trust 100% are going to be there barring an injury, which you can't predict. And then there's like a handful of really good ones, like an Andrew Miller of 20-plus saves. And then there's like 5 to 10 teams at times that you have no clue what the heck's going to go on. So how do you approach the closers landscape? Like, you're talking your drafts and holds or just leagues in general?
Yeah, so, you know, for most of the time that I've played fantasy baseball, I have waited on closers and haven't bought them at all. And, you know, bought a few guys maybe at the end, a few speculative guys. And I've won many leagues doing it that way. But in recent years, with the changes to the landscape, I have found that I've needed to invest a little bit more in closers. And so I usually don't try to grab the top guys. But I will try to grab, you know, two or three. So even in this last draft and hold that I did, I ended up drafting three closers. And I think I used like my seventh, eighth, and ninth round picks on closers, guys that I felt had a pretty good hold on the roll. And I, you know, if you're in a league that just uses saves, you know, a lot of leagues use saves and holds or saves times two plus holds. You know, there's a lot of different variables out there, iterations, but if you're in a league that just uses saves, and you've got to get them if you want to compete. And I think if you're going to do that, you have to pay up and get yourself a few good ones and then speculate later in the draft, you know, maybe in those deeper leagues in the 40 through 50 round range on high upside arms that could end up closing. And they're plentiful. So you can wait on those guys till the end.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I was just like you, I used to wait forever, and it's just kind of, it's getting interesting now. Very, very interesting. And having to change philosophy is always part of the game.
Makes it fun.
Yep, exactly. A fun trade that took place over the holidays. And as, you know, a Bay Area Giants fan, I do appreciate the A's. I watch the A's. I enjoy the A's. They're fun, especially when the Giants suck right now. I enjoy the A's a lot. So when I saw them go and trade for Jerks and Profar, and there were obviously prospects and draft picks and international money we don't need to talk about, Jerks and Profar, going to the Oakland A's to get everyday playing time, coming off one of his better seasons, still very, very young. And I really don't know what's not to like about this deal, but if you have something, let me know, because I must have my rose-colored glasses on right now, because I have nothing but great things to say about this deal. What's your thoughts on Profar going to the A's?
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. Nice move for the A's in general. Just to land a guy like that, was a former top prospect, like the top prospect in baseball. And, you know, suffered that shoulder injury that took him years to come back from. And I think what we saw is just that it you know, he didn't regain full strength in that shoulder. What we wondered was, would he ever be able to get that shoulder back to where it was? And maybe not. I don't know that he ever had a great arm for, you know, a great, you know, defensive arm for throwing the ball. I can't remember, but I know it's not where they're going to be putting him back at shortstop probably now. But the shoulder has recovered enough that he seems to have regained a lot of that batting potential that he once had. And we saw that throughout 2018, especially as the season progressed, he kept getting better and better and better. We, you know, looking at his second half line there, it's really impressive. One of the metrics that we use a lot at Baseball HQ is we call it hard contact index. And it's a combination of hard hit balls with contact rate, and it's put on a league average scale. So Profar recorded a 130 hard contact index in the second half, which means that he was putting hard hit balls in play at a rate of 30% better than the league average hitter, which is extremely impressive. That would be one of the top rates in the league. He also was hitting, you know, I think I mentioned earlier that I like hard hit fly balls a lot. He was hitting a lot more hard hit fly balls in the second half. His average exit velocity of his fly ball spiked up to about 93 miles an hour, and his average fly ball distance up to 332 feet. So he was doing a lot more with the contact he was making. And what he didn't do, which you really like to see with somebody who starts hitting the ball harder and harder in the air more, is he didn't have to open his swing to do it. He was still making contact at a pretty high rate and taking his walk. So, you know, it's still a nice, you know, 0.62, you know, walk to strikeout ratio. And he was very impressive. Also with Profar, he's not a burner. He's not somebody that's, you know, going to steal 30 or 40 bags, but he does have, you know, average to maybe slightly above average speed. And I was looking at him preparing for this podcast. I hadn't realized it before, but he was perfect on his stolen base attempts last year, 10 for 10. And his minor league success rate was 76%. So this is a guy, I think, that he knows how to steal bases. He knows what to look for and when to pick his spots. And I think there's a lot of upside still left in this young hitter. I think we could see a pretty good, pretty good production from him in an everyday role with power, speed, and batting average.
Yeah, there's a lot to like there. Playing in Oco Coliseum is going to hurt a bit, but still, there's, I think, the talent's there and everyday playing time, and he's going to keep getting better, like you mentioned. It might just been him getting over those injuries, and it takes time for these guys. And still so young, we still haven't even probably seen his peak yet. I was going about pick 119 right now with multi-position eligibility. I think there is a ton to like about Jerickson Profar. He's really big on my list, and I like what I see there. All right, a couple of relievers we can quick hit on. Joaquin Soria, Joe Kelly found new landing spots. For now, they're going to be setup men, potentially could fill in for some closers, maybe just good ratios. Any interest in them, or what kind of formats would you be interested in them in?
Mm-hmm. So with Soria, I think I still would be interested in him. He's one of those guys that I would speculate on late, you know, in a draft and hold league as a potential, you know, fill-in closer at some point. You know, Blake Treinen obviously has the job there in Oakland, and he's just amazing. We all love watching the gifts of his 99 mile an hour sinkers that just move like a slider. He's amazing. But he hadn't been that consistent previously. Watching him in Washington here, he kind of stunk here. So you never know what's going to happen year to year, especially with closers. They're highly volatile, and you never know when an injury is going to pop up. And Soria, despite being 35 years old, still has stellar skills. And, you know, if he got the shot at closing, he definitely has the skills to run with it.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And with Joe Kelly, he throws hard. We all know that. We love watching that velocity. You know, he pumps it up there at 100 miles an hour, but he's just not skilled enough to close, or really even to use as a middle reliever, in my opinion. He's just not somebody that I'd be interested in at all.
Yeah, I agree. Soria, he's got the pedigree. We've seen him do it. I like the idea there. Trinan's a monster, but Soria definitely get his work, and we saw how well Familia filled in there when he came over, so I do like that quite a bit. When it comes to Kelly, you really got to think, man, the Dodgers just paid for like 9 amazing postseason games. That was outstanding work there by Joe Kelly's agent. But the velocity's fun and all. He's got that, you know, weird, quirky personality that some people love, some people hate, but that's about as far as it goes fantasy-wise for me.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, there is another really good signing. I'm really a big fan of the Jurickson Profar trade. Really big fan of the Daniel Murphy signing with the Rockies. We, you know, injury riddled season, went to the Cubs, played pretty well once he went there. Still played well for the Nats too. But we've seen what he can do when he's healthy and playing full seasons. He's a 300 plus hitter. He's got 20 plus homer potential. There's a lot to like with Daniel Murphy. He's, you know, going to be 34 this year, but still playing in Coors Field. Not a lot not to like here, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree completely. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, the thing that when you think of Coors Field, you think it's the best hitting environment that, baseball has to offer. Now, it may not be the most home run friendly environment, but it is home run friendly. But it, what it really does is it boosts batting averages. Coors Field boosts batting averages more than any other ballpark. I mean, significantly more than any other ballpark. You've got Daniel Murphy, who's already a batting average asset. You know, he's got the high contact, the hard contact, a lot like Michael Brantley in that way. He's just one of those guys that you can pretty much count on nowadays for a good batting average. And going to Coors Field is just only going to enhance that. I mean, he could certainly challenge for a batting average title, I think, in the next season or so. But the thing is, he didn't – the power was off a little bit last year in D.C. And in Chicago. And I just wonder – if it was injury related, if he just never quite fully got his legs under him and was able to recover, and if he's, you know, able to get back to full strength here in the offseason, if we'll see that power spike back again to where it had been, you know, in 2017, or if it's, you know, an age related decline, that I'm not sure on. But, you know, you draft Daniel Murphy for that batting average and hope for the, you know, he's not, the ADP is not bad. So he's definitely somebody I'm looking at to fill my second base or middle infield spot. 2019.
Yeah, you put him in a lineup with Trevor Story, who's blowing up again. You have Blackman, you have Arenado. It's not going to suck having Daniel Murphy in there. You can tell, I think he's already getting the Coors boost when it comes to NFBC, because his lowest pick at one point in time was 231. Now he's up to 83. He's still averaging 160, but like it shows you the variance there. I'm pretty sure 83 came most recently, just based on the signing would be my guess. But still a lot to like there. And guys, you know, I'm not going to go over average ADP, but draft pick wise, you know, Rougned Odor's highest draft pick's 82. Do you go Daniel Murphy or do you go Rougned Odor? Because some still believe Rougned's young and going to continue to improve. But man, that batting average could be just a tremendous liability.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll take Daniel Murphy over Odor any day.
Yeah, so Murphy, like a couple others we've mentioned here, now that they have new landing spots, the ADPs are going to be very, very fun to rise. And I reference ADP a lot just because it gives talking points. I mentioned this on a lot of my shows, but it's not the end all be all for listeners. Like, don't just run to ADP, but it's a good kind of gauge on where you need to be looking at things, at least in my opinion, where you can find value, other things like that come draft time. A big trade that took place, Reds, Dodgers. The Dodgers are good for these salary dump trades, and poor Matt Kemp seems to be in them all the time. But Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, Alex Wood go to Cincinnati. Homer Bailey comes back with some prospects. Bailey's going to be released, so I'm not worrying about that right now. Prospects are fine and dandy. We can talk about that on a Dynasty show. But most importantly, I want to hear Yasiel Puig in Great American Ballpark. As a Giants fan, I have hated Puig my whole life. There's been like 5% of me that has enjoyed watching him because he's just fun and funny. But as a Giants fan, I cannot enjoy him. Now I am excited to watch Yasiel Puig and maybe on my fantasy teams. What's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, Puig, you're right. He's been entertaining the whole time he's been in the league. You know, the racing, you know, talking to himself in the back of the cop car. Why do you have to race, Puig? You know, he's been a riot. He's been a lot of fun to watch. The antics at the plate, the strong arm, you know, trying to show it off in right field and gun runners down at third base. I've really enjoyed watching him. But he would seem to certainly prospect trade going to Dodger Stadium that is not friendly to right-handed power to, you know, Great American Ballpark that increases right-handed power by about 18% over a neutral environment. So this would certainly seem to favor both Puig and Kemp as far as home run power goes in 2019. You know, after returning from an oblique injury in late July, we saw Puig, he went big. You know, he posted a 900 plus OPS over the final 2 months of the season, 14 home runs, 8 stolen bases, and only 175 at-bats. Now, if you're quick at doing the math, that's 44 home runs and 25 stolen base pace over a full season, which, you know, we don't want to get too carried away, but it just shows you the kind of explosive finish that Puig had. And he's entering his age 28 season, So, you know, he very well could be primed for a big year in these new, in this new hitter friendly ballpark. But, you know, I would still tend to temper expectations a bit with Puig. You know, he's proven, as we mentioned, he's proven volatile in both performance and personality over the years, which does add risk to his profile. And additionally, he just simply, he doesn't put enough hard hit balls into the air for me to have much faith in him surpassing that 30 home run plateau. His hard hit fly ball rate last year was 14%, which is only slightly above the league average of 13.3%. Most of the big, you know, 30 home run sluggers are well above that. So, you know, there's certainly some exciting things about Puig, you know, the new ballpark, all the latent talent that he has, that physical prowess. You can just see him oozing athleticism, but there's still plenty of reasons to be a little bit skeptical on him. And, you know, with Matt Kemp, he's unexciting. I mean, he's still got some pop to him, but the Matt Kemp that almost went 40-40 a number of years ago is long gone.
You mean MVP or All-Star Matt Kemp? Isn't, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah. He's going like after 300s, but I wouldn't be shocked if he still gets traded again. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see where he goes. There's too many pieces. Now they're blocking Scott Schebler. They're blocking Jesse Winker. It's like, okay, get Kemp out of here. You're a rebuilding team that are making moves to be competitive now, but don't screw up the rebuild. So
right,
get him out of the way. I like the Puig move because it does help you. Tanner Work in the rotation helps you. Alex Wood, you know, it's giving you depth in your rotation, all these things you need. At the same time, you're not going to let your young kids play. It makes zero sense. So figure that part out. And they will. I've been really impressed with what the Reds are doing. I thought they were, you know, at the end of the season, before they made any moves, I thought the Reds were a good 2 or 3 years away still. If they keep making a couple more little moves here and bring a prospect or two up named Nick Senzel and a few others, realistically, they might be a lot closer than we think in a division that's just going to beat up each other all year long. So,
oh, yeah, you're right. I mean, having exciting young guys like Jesse Winker, you know, I mean, that the way he – what happened right before his shoulder injury, he was hitting for power and that kind of plate discipline. I mean, he looks really exciting. I'm really hoping that shoulder comes back full strength here in 2019. The Reds could be very interesting.
And let's not forget Scooter Gennett, everybody.
True.
I love Scooter. I have nothing bad to say about Scooter. The last piece of this, and this is – I'm just going to ask you about Alex Wood because he just baffles me. Like, when I watch him some games, I'm like, how is this guy even a top-end pitcher? I got, like, you know, at least a good number three because he just gets shelled and he looks so hittable. And there's other games where he just lights out filthy. And there's injury concerns with him. And he goes to Great American Small Park, which always scares me. So what's your thoughts on Alex Wood? Because it depends on where you listen right now. Some people are still very excited on him. And then there's guys like me where I'm just staying away at all costs.
Yeah, I'm probably in the same camp as you. I don't think I'll own many shares of Alex Wood in 2019. You know, the velocity was down. I think he needs that. You know, in 2017, he was really good. And it was in part because the velocity spiked back up. You know, he was back up to near 92 miles an hour. And last year he was down below 90 again. I just don't think that he, you know, as a lefty, you can get by with a little less velocity. And I think he's pretty good when he's 91, 92. But when he's sub 90, I don't think he's got the stuff to pitch around that fastball. I don't know. I'm not terribly optimistic either.
All right. Let's go back to Oakland. Another typical Oakland A signing, one I thought they should have done right away. Doesn't light the world on fire by any means, and that is really not intentional now that I thought about it. But Mike Fiers had a really surprisingly good season last year between Oakland and Detroit, a 3.56 ERA and 172 innings pitched. I think they take that any day of the week. You're expecting probably more like 4.5 ERA. But pitching in that ballpark does not hurt. I think it's a great move for them. Any fantasy relevance here?
A little bit. I think in deep leagues, you know, there's something to be said for Fiers. He can get you some innings. I agree. He's probably a little bit of ERA and WHIP regression is due him in 2019. He pitched, you know, beyond his peripherals. So I think you're probably right there. He's another guy that's a soft tosser with, you know, doesn't really have strikeout stuff. Pitched with solid control last year, but better than any control level he'd ever posted previously. So, you know, in Oakland, he could have a little bit of value in deeper leagues as a you know, last resort type of starter, but nothing exciting there.
All right, he's going around a couple guys. Would you have Fiers or Matt Boyd?
I'll take Boyd. I like his last name, first of all. And, he's no relation, of course, but he's another he's a lefty that had a little bit of a velocity spike, and I've always been interested in Boyd's stuff. He does have a few off speed pitches that have intrigued me, and when he has his solid velocity, which seems to kind of come and go a little bit based on health and a little bit based on mechanics. But when he does have it all working, there's something there, and he's a lot younger than Fires too. So I'd give him a little bit of an edge there with as far as upside goes.
Mike Fires or the just giant question mark named Luke Weaver.
And again, I'll go with Luke Weaver there too for the upside. I thought he was overdrafted last year. I wasn't interested in him at all in 2018 drafts based on that small sample 2017 breakout he had, but. Now his price has dropped quite a bit, and I'm a little bit more interested again.
And last one, Mike Fires or Jake Junis?
I'll probably go Fires here, actually. I don't see a whole lot of upside in Junis, so I'd probably stick with Fires for reliability there.
Perfect. Here's another signing I liked a lot. The Rays are a fun team to root for if you don't have too many biases out there. They're always entertaining. They always do something different. They're always really young. They signed a veteran here to stabilize this rotation, and I like it a lot because the rotation is young and looking really good this year. But you throw in a guy like Charlie Morton, who, there's injury questions, which seems to be a trend, but the stuff has been outstanding since he's gone to Houston and developed that slider that he has there. So what's your thoughts on Charlie Morton going to Tampa Bay?
Yeah, like you said, it's a really nice landing spot for him going there. It's a, there's a net – when you add the difference between the two stadiums, it's a net 29% home run suppression increase from Minute Maid Park to Tropicana Field.
Wow.
Minute Maid. And I suddenly have a hankering for some orange juice. Is that Minute Maid Park?
At least it's not in Ron still, because I'm going to be depressed. So it's
yeah. But, Morton is 35 years old, and he did seem to tire a bit as the season progressed last year. He was firing 96-mile-an-hour fastballs in April and May, but that – his velocity slowly eroded each month as the season progressed, and he ended up bottoming out around 94.7 in September. But I think some of that may have been due to injuries, and some of it just due to him getting older. So, or just being getting tired, I should say, being old and getting tired as the season went on, which doesn't happen to every pitcher. And Houston does seem to have a little bit of a magic formula there for those older pitchers. But that was the case with Morton. I still think that he'll be, maybe look for the same sort of a thing from him. If he starts this year pumping up those fastballs again at a higher velocity and is pitching really well, he might be a nice sell high candidate, as he's likely to probably tire out or get injured as the season progresses. But I agree with you. It's a nice signing. There's certainly fantasy value there. It just depends on cost.
Yeah, and the cost right now, he's going 111th overall. Which is a little steep, and let's compare a few. It's got him at 111, Robbie Ray at 115.
I'll go Robbie Ray there. I like the younger guy. I like that strikeout stuff. I've watched a lot of Robbie Ray pitch, and I think he's just on the cusp of taking it to that next level. So I definitely go Ray there.
If Robbie Ray could ever limit the walks, my goodness, he could be scary. Charlie Morton at 111 or Kyle Freeland at 117.
That's a tough one for me. I don't like soft tossers, so I'd probably end up going with Morton. Yeah, exactly.
Terrifying. What he did last year might be one of the greatest single achievements on the face of starting pitching.
I don't know how he did it. Yeah, I agree with you. So I'm going Morton all the way here, actually.
And then the last one, just for fun, because everybody loved him last year, and the hype, surprisingly, on ADP-wise, is still up there, but Charlie Morton at 111 or Luis Castillo at 120.
Oh, and that's an easy call for me. I'm a Luis Castillo fanboy, so I'm definitely I'm going with him all the day. I mean, I think he's another guy I watched a lot of the last couple of years. Just wanted to figure out who he is and what he's got. And that changeup is just filthy. And when the slider's working too, he can be unhittable. I think he's got number one ace potential if he can just put it all together and work on that fastball command a little bit. We talk a lot about his fastball velocity, and I think that he needs to have that, 97-mile-an-hour fastball velocity because he doesn't have great fastball command. But, we've seen plenty of pitchers without high-velocity fastballs that can get by when they can command it. So it's like with Castillo, we just need to see either one or the other, right? Either he keeps that velocity or he improves his command. And let's hope that it's the latter, because it seems – more sustainable than staying healthy and throwing 98 all the time.
I think people need to go teach kids these days. Just let them go watch Greg Maddux games for a little while, and they'll realize you can do a lot without you know, throwing 98 miles an hour. Yeah, I'm with you. Luis Castillo, when that arsenal is in full effect, it is terrifying. So it'd be great to watch. I was all in on him last year, and then I was the stubborn guy that I wouldn't drop him. I'm like, I can't drop him. Like, I can't do it. And I know that's a fault for a lot of fantasy players. I dropped a lot of other guys. I was the idiot that dropped Matt Carpenter, for crying out loud, okay? So it was one of those years, right? It didn't matter what I did last year at times. It was very, very frustrating. But, yeah. You know, we started off talking about Mr. Consistency and Carlos Santana. Well, let's get to maybe Senor Consistency. The boomstick, Nelson Cruz going to Minnesota. I was hoping Tampa Bay, but Minnesota is a phenomenal landing spot. That offense is going to hit a lot of home runs this year in a very home run friendly ballpark that many don't think is home run friendly. But Woe Nelly going to Minnesota, I guess, in my opinion, he's going to be the same great hitter. What's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, he's 39 years old. He's that's really old in baseball years.
I compared him to a fine wine yesterday.
Yeah, that's you're right. He's really seasoned well, and he just keeps chugging along, producing the same sort of things. I mean, I think in the baseball forecaster, whoever wrote up his little box there said something like one of these years he's going to fall off, but it doesn't look like it's going to be 2019. You know, he still looks like the pretty much the same guy that is, you know, he posted a 900 plus OPS there for three straight years between 2015 and 2017. Dropped down a little bit to 850 last year, but he's still just a great power hitter. So I don't expect too much of a difference here from Nelly in Minnesota.
Yeah, I absolutely love him this year. Let's just have a fun. Who do you think falls off first? And this is kind of rude to be pessimistic about it, but do you think Nelson Cruz or Edwin is the first one to kind of, because they're both just still crushing the baseball. So which one do you think falls apart first?
Oh, man, that's a tough call, isn't it? I mean, they're both
old guys that we're trusting to keep hitting. So eventually one will.
I guess I'd probably, if I had to pick one, I'd probably go with Cruz just because I think he's a little bit older, isn't he? Encarnacion's 36. Cruz is 39. So I guess I'd go with him if I have to choose one just because of that. But, yeah, they're both pretty reliable and consistent. What about you?
For part of me wants to say Edwin just because the swinging strikes and all that good stuff is slowly getting worse. But yeah, Nelson's older, so if you just go by laws of what's real in the world, you'd imagine it'd be him. But man, just sitting there and just crushing home runs the way he does is pretty darn impressive. So I hope neither does. I hope they both play like Julio Franco times. Like, give me some Julio Franco. Kids don't even know who Julio Franco is anymore. The guy was like 48 hitting 20 plus home runs a year. It's crazy.
I know, but really, that'd be fun to see these guys do that.
Yeah, but one last one. I forgot to put it on the outline, and if you don't have a lot of info, it's fine. Just we'll spitball for a minute here. But it intrigued me, Domingo Santana getting traded to the Mariners, and I basically said, okay, they replaced Nelson Cruz with Nelson Cruz Jr. Like, you could see the look, the build. We've all thought Domingo could be great. 2017 was amazing. 2018 didn't work out so well playing time-wise and all the above. He's going to get pretty much every day at bats in Seattle now. And in the real reason I wanted to bring this up real quick, he's going 410th overall. Now, since the trade, maybe this has changed because his highest pick is 281. So he might be trending in the right direction. But right now he's averaging 410. So if you're in draft and hold leagues, enjoy. But obviously I could see 281 being more realistic. But what's your thoughts on Domingo Santana getting a full-time role in Seattle?
Yeah, so I mean, when I did my draft a couple weeks ago, he was still, I don't think he had signed yet, or maybe he signed right during the draft, and I got him, really late. So he's a guy that I like a lot there to speculate on late. And going in the 200s, I'd have to reassess. But, do we think he's going to play? And we've got Malik Smith and Mitch Haniger are the two everyday outfielders there, right? And then is Jay Bruce, they have Jay Bruce?
Yeah, they got Jay Bruce in the trade for Cano. It is sloppy because you got Bruce who can play first base DH or outfielder. Eventually, you want to play Dan Vogelbach. You can't just keep wasting him away in AAA. There's a lot of moving parts, but then I still have hope that Jerry DePoto's not done making trades.
You're probably right. And then there's if he can make one from the hospital bed there.
That's one of the more impressive things I've ever heard. Like, come on, man.
Oh, I know. So impressive. I don't even know if I'd make one for my fantasy team from a hospital bed.
Exactly. But
One last thing I want to ask you, and we'll wrap it up. You mentioned you're in NFBC, you like to play. You mentioned you've done one draft Champions League. You don't have to go super deep on this, but if you just have – a lot of people haven't played draft Champions or best balls or whatever, however people want to describe them. What kind of strategy do you use going into that? Because you've already mentioned a few things like your catchers and some other things, but like how risky do you want to be or what stability are you looking for, stuff like that?
Yeah, so you want to – it's a lot like your stock portfolio, right? So you want some – you want to diversify. I like to go with my – early on, I like to go with the solid assets. I want to draft guys that are dependable, that I can count on, and that have very low risk. So that's usually what I do to begin the draft. And what I like to do before I start drafting is I kind of like to look at the ADPs and see – you know, here's the high-risk guys with a lot of upside. Where can I get them? And kind of plug a few of them in the later rounds and say, all right, these are going to be my risky guys that, you know, have a ton of upside that could really win me this league. And I'm going to draft them, you know, where there's not a whole lot of risk to drafting them. And I'm going to draft those, you know, the solid, you know, the Manny Machados, the Anthony Rendones, the stellar Iron Man type players early on. And so that's kind of the strategy that I generally use. I do like to grab a couple of really good starting pitchers. You know, I want to grab at least two aces, you know. So, and when I say an ace, you know, so like in the one league that I did already, I grabbed Gerrit Cole and Zach Greinke. So I would consider both of them aces in deeper leagues. And then I like to speculate on guys who have flashed, you know, ace-like potential. So a number of years ago, I drafted Corey Kluber. He won me an NFBC league that year that he broke out because he had kind of shown flashes of that before that. And his first breakout season, you know, he was somebody I drafted in like the 18th or 19th round. So I try to always look for those kind of guys. So this year, a few of the guys that I'm looking at are like, you know, Joe Musgrove and Tyler Skaggs and Dylan Bundy, Matt Harvey, even, you know, even Lucas Giolito, you know, showed a little flash last year. I think it was in August, maybe. So just looking for those guys who've shown, you know, little flashes, especially ones who had top, you know, prospect pedigree and, you know, maybe have failed a little bit in the majors. For some reason, it seems like fantasy leaguers just love to dismiss those guys really quick. And that's where you can really find some good values. The other place I like to mine good values is in the old boring veterans. You know, we just mentioned Jay Bruce. He's one of those guys that nobody wants to touch. Jay Bruce, you know, Brett Gardner's. They're the guys that are really easy to get values on. You know, Anderson Simmons. I love drafting guys like that. You can just plug them in. They're good players. Maybe they don't have a ton of upside, but you know, at the values you can get for them, they'll win you your leagues. So that's kind of a general feel for my deep league strategy there.
I love it. A lot of great info today, Derek. It's been a lot of fun talking to you. I could sit here and talk baseball with you all day long. So we're gonna have to do this again sometime. But for now, we're going to wrap up episode 133, and I want to say a special thank you for joining me tonight.
Hey, you know what? You're very welcome. Thank you for having me on. I'd love to come back on any other time.
Yeah, we'll definitely do it again. Everybody, check him out on Twitter at DerekBHQ, and go check out all the great work the guys do over there at Baseball HQ. Great stuff. You mentioned the forecaster already. That's just a normal daily reading for me. So everyone, go check out all the great work over there, and go check out Derek on Twitter again at DerekBHQ. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 133, tons of fantasy baseball talk. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.